Elizabeth Esty, I guess you're talking to a 76-year-old man. A guy was just here for an interview and said, you sound like a 26-year-old. So I was delighted with that. Nevertheless, I've been around a long time, and I love my Social Security. So we got Social Security, we got Medicare, and we've got Medicaid. Are these third rails, somebody touches them like Trump, and they're going to get damaged?
Well, it's a really interesting thing that you raise that, because I'd actually be pretty surprised to see President Trump touching, and in fact, he pledged repeatedly and loudly that he would not touch Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, but he is a well-known liar. So why would he?
Well,
keep his word on
that? Well, I think he'd find that, you know, he's not going to be getting cheering crowds adoring him if he touches either of those programs. Medicare and Social Security have been incredibly important in lifting seniors out of poverty. I mean, who can object to that? Do you want grandma to be impoverished? Do you want grandma not to be able to afford her medication? Do you want grandma to have to be living, you to have to give up your job so you stay home and take care of grandma? And that's about Medicaid, because a lot of Medicaid goes to folks who are seniors who are in poverty and who need long-term care. And frankly, almost anybody who needs long-term care is going to end up on Medicaid because it's so darn expensive. So we have a lot to do to figure out how to spend less than 18% of every 18 cents on every dollar in our country, in our economy, is on health care, and the next closest country is at 9%. We could do a lot if we even just got to 12 or 13%. We could free up a ton of money to invest in education, lifelong learning, environmental protection, rebuilding our bridges and roads and dams and tunnels and subway systems and rail systems, and upgrading our airports. I'm trying to get us focused on that. So I'll be surprised, actually, if the president focuses on Social Security and Medicare, but it's certainly his proposals on the Affordable Care Act and his support has been for legislation that would dramatically reduce Medicaid and leave the states holding the bag.
Is that a part of his war on the poor?
I don't know if it's a war on the poor. I think that may be giving more intentionality to it than there ought to be. And it kind of depends on the day. Because remember, after having a celebratory party at the White House after the House of Representatives passed over great objection a repeal bill, then about 2 weeks later, the president said he thought the House bill was really mean. So I'm not sure that we really know what his views are on this. I know what mine are, though. There are things we can and should do to make sure Medicare and Social Security are there long into the future. And we need to figure out how to get more people working at better wages, and that will help grow our economy so we have fewer people who need the support of Medicaid, because they're going to have jobs. And what I found, Alan, people would take a job, a well-paid job, over a government program any day of the week. And that ought to be something, and that is something that I find a lot of support for with my Republican colleagues. So if we can keep our efforts on that, we're going to be in a way different place in 2 or 3 or 4 years down the road and have a lot more choices about positive things we can be doing rather than just what we're against.
Are you happy about General Kelly coming to the White House?
I am happy to see what I think may be some more order at the White House. I have to say I'm not thrilled with the very large number of generals on the civilian side. We have a long-standing principle in this country of civilian leadership over the military, and a very large number of generals in civilian leadership positions, in addition, overseeing generals themselves, is a point of caution, I think. That's something, and that's not personal to him, nor to General Mattis. I have respect for both of them, particularly General Mattis, who I've had a chance to see in operation in a number of settings. But I do have some concern about a large number of generals, I have to say.
I couldn't agree with you more, because these generals may be okay, but what about the next generals? And
well, that's right. It's a precedent. And again, there's reason in the U.S. Form of government. We have civilians in charge.
Trump
and civilians are in charge of the military, and so a very large number of generals is somewhat concerning.
President Trump wants to ban transgender people from the military. Your thoughts?
I think it's a mistake, and he obviously, apparently he did consult with his generals, and they told him no, to leave it alone and let them deal with it, and he refused to do that.
So, is that playing to the base? Is that the whole idea here?
You'd have to ask him that. That's certainly what it looks like. It is dysfunctional. There are thousands of, 1,000, 2,000, or 3,000transgender folks, sworn military officers in the U.S. military, and they are serving this country. And that's why you see the generals standing up and defending them and saying, we're going to continue our policies of those who are serving this country honorably and well will be supported in doing that. And I think they are absolutely right. I serve on the Veterans Committee, and we have an all-volunteer force, and people who choose to serve this country and put their lives in harm's way deserve to have the support of the American people.
Talk to me a little bit, got a couple of minutes, on the opioid crisis. President Trump comes along and says New Hampshire is basically a den of addiction. What do you think?
I think we've got a serious opioid crisis in America. Connecticut is on track to surpass last year's numbers, which eclipsed by a lot the year before and the year before that. We expect to have more than 1,000 deaths in Connecticut for opioid addiction. I cannot read my local paper, my weekly paper in Cheshire, Connecticut, where my kids went to high school, without seeing someone around their age every couple of weeks who's died of an overdose. It is tragic, and it does not have to be this way. But it is going to take concerted effort with law enforcement, with addiction specialists, with, for example, the VA, where we're working on prescribing practices. We need to work with our doctors and medical professionals on how they're prescribing opioids. And I think we need to bring in to the table the drug companies, because the complication rate, when you have approximately 30% of people for some of these very powerful opioids winding up, those who have prescriptions who wind up with difficulty, is an extremely high complication rate. And I think we have to ask whether those medications are so powerful and too dangerous. And perhaps we should be looking at regulating those differently. Because that's a complication rate. Imagine, Alan, if you went in for surgery and they told you there was a 30% complication rate. You'd wonder long and hard about whether you should undergo the surgery. So we're kind of that way around opioids right now. So we need to rethink that. And number one, we need to stop the shame about people who find they're gripped by addiction, because that in and of itself becomes a real impediment to families being able to get help and treatment.
It's wonderful to talk to our friend, Congresswoman Elizabeth Esty, a Democrat in Connecticut's beautiful 5th District, been in office since 2013. And Elizabeth, I can't tell you how pleased we are when you come around and talk to us. I really appreciate it.
Well, I can always count on a great conversation, and you bring all 76 years of experience and knowledge and passion to the table. So it's always delightful talking with someone who's as thoughtful and knowledgeable as you are.
And as old. Thank you very much.
I didn't say that. You said that. I didn't. As seasoned.